Check my inbox and what do I see? Just another day, another T-R-A-D-E. I'm an addict, and I need it in my veins. I'm an addict, otherwise I feel plain now. Every day I wake up, people got a problem. Making all these trades up, got me singing got them. But I've been paid up, I even started from the bottom. See, I don't wait up, I ain't even playing possum. So what it cost, I'm just a couple of firsts. Can't believe that it worked, not to say I'm a jerk. But I'm an addict, it's what I said in the first. You can curse all you want, you can pray in your church. But I'ma keep tapping return, I win up, I learn. I ain't trying to burn any bridges, I yearn. For the feeling I earn, all my winners to turn. You had a cheek before I drop you like the beat. I'm an addict, and I'm not really ashamed. I'm an addict, I'm reclining with the brain. I'm an addict, and the pot is what I'm playing. I'm an addict,
Russin Rocky,
other names. Trade addicts pie, let's go.
I am Rocky Petrella, and I have a trading problem.
I am Drew Prawl, and I trade because I'm unhappy, and I'm unhappy because I trade. It's a vicious cycle.
I'm Izzy, and I also, like Rocky, have a trading problem.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Session 180 of the Trade Addicts Pod, a proud member of the Dynasty Addicts Podcast Network, the DAP Network, if you will, as well as a member of the DLF family of podcasts. As you can hear tonight, Russ can't be with us. He had a little issue come up before the show. So in addition to having a great guest on here in Izzy, the Pharaoh of Fantasy, Alkafas, we also have Drew, I don't want to, is it Prowl? Did I say your name right?
Close enough.
Yeah, I knew I was going to butcher that. A member of the DAP Network here, co-host of the Fantasy Timeline with Bill and Josh. So very happy to have them here. And Izzy, how you doing tonight?
Good, hanging in there. I'm not in the best location. We moved into a house not too long ago, and we haven't like fully furnished because everything's delayed because of COVID. So there's right. There's some what do you call that? Issues with the, what is it called when things just in transit? What is that called? Why am I drawing a blank on that?
I'm not sure. I'm drawing a blank on it too.
Everything's delayed because of, dude, I can't believe I'm drawing a blank on it. This is like the reason why you can't get things on time that you order. And God, what the, you guys should come on. Help me out. I'm drawing a blank.
But things are back ordered or we got,
yeah, they're back ordered because the people, they can't. Wow, I can't believe I'm drawing a blank on this.
Raw material.
We'll just move on.
Well, we got to get this. I mean,
delivery.
People are screaming at their monitors right now. Like, and yelling at their radios because we can't figure this out as a group. I feel like, have you played Pictionary? You've played Pictionary. Yeah, I feel like I'm trying definitely to draw, like, pointing at this thing, and you guys aren't getting the answer.
Right.
And the time is running out. But,
yeah, things are back ordered or
yeah, they're back ordered.
Production or
like they can't get the ships in. There's a
like an embargo or something or
yeah, but it's
now it's like on the tip of my tongue. I know what you're talking about, but I can't think of the word either.
It's like everything is supply chain. It's a supply chain issue.
That works.
Okay, so they can't get things in because factories are shut down and wherever China, and they're not able to get everything going. So it's a supply chain issue.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you.
Glad we got that figured out. But yeah, I mean, moves are a bitch in general anyway, I imagine. Yeah. In this
time
right
house,
now.
That's what matters.
So I'm actually recording from my kitchen. So there's going to be a little bit more of an echo because we don't have as much furniture in the kitchen.
Gotcha. No problem. But Izzy, as a first time guest, we like to do a little interview with all our first timers on the show. So we'll get into that before we move on to the rest of the stuff here. So Izzy, how long have you been playing fantasy?
Fantasy for 20 years. 2002 was my first year. So 20, no, well before then. Yeah, no, 2002. I think I was 17 when I played my first fantasy league. So 2002. And then first Dynasty League was 2007.
Oh, yes, that's a nice long time there. Yeah. Well before I was playing. Drew, I don't think you've ever been on the show. How long have you been playing Dynasty?
Dynasty, probably about 5-6 years. Started with your traditional one QB. Smart enough to start on MFL, though, or lucky enough to start on MFL because we wanted to customize a few things. But Fantasy in general, started my first redraft in 2009, so about 12, 13 years there.
Yeah, and I'm with the Izzy on Fantasy, but yeah, I took me a long time to get into Dynasty. It's the Izzy's a long timer there. So, so in terms of trades, we'd always like to ask that. What is your best Dynasty trade? You got years and years of experience to choose from. So, what is your best one?
Yeah, so I'm gonna more like talk about the philosophy of my trade and certain trades I've been able to execute with this philosophy. And I call it the Buck Allen trade because it all started with a Buck Allen trade. If you guys remember Buck Allen, taking your first with a player of reasonable value, like decent value, and trading it for a team's first round pick that you think will struggle in that year. So I made this Buck Allen trade. I traded my first and Buck Allen, and my first ended up being the last pick in the rookie draft. I won the championship, and then I traded for somebody else's first in week one or week two. And at the time, they're like 1-1 or something like that, and they actually finished last. So I ended up getting Zeke. So I won the championship and turned my first into Zeke, and then just continued my dynasty. So always been a favorite strategy. It doesn't work in my home leagues anymore because people know what I'm doing. So I can't do it, but you can definitely implement it in other leagues. So if you're a chronic contender and there's somebody that just doesn't know what they're doing or struggles on an annual basis and you know they're going to implode, trade your first and a reasonable, maybe a late second round value or somebody might need for their first. Especially early, because they won't really think about it. Like, they'll be like, oh, I can win. I got a good team. But no, they don't.
Yeah, I like that a lot, sort of betting on yourself. I don't know if I ever pulled that move specifically. I know when you said that about getting Zeke, I know in my first Dynasty League, I think I traded 2015 LeSean McCoy. He was still decent, but not the LeSean McCoy we think of in his early days. And it might have been 2016. No, I guess it was 2015 because I also got Zeke. I traded him. It was a salary cap league, and we just couldn't afford him, so we moved him for a random first, which ended up the 101. And yeah, so we traded LeSean McCoy for Zeke nice. The next year with my co-manager. So that worked out real nice too. So what about your worst one? Do you have a worst trade?
The worst trade is the one I never made. That counts, right?
I guess so.
Why yeah. not, right?
I like so, that answer.
Actually a trade involving my business partner and podcast partner, John Paul Hurley. Mm-hmm. We are in a 14 team point per carry league. So pretty heavily favored to running backs, especially ones that get a lot of carries.
Right.
So in 2018, I had Jordan Howard and he had Christian McCaffrey. And he, at the time, Jordan Howard was the guy, and Christian McCaffrey was a satellite back with upside. So he offered me Christian McCaffrey for Jordan Howard straight up. And at the time, I was like, well, you know, I don't know what Christian McCaffrey's role is going to be, how expanded it's going to be, and Jordan Howard's going to get me 250 carries. So in a normal league, I would pull that. But we were both after the same thing, the carries. Because, like, after, you know, if you're getting four, like, Derrick Henry gets you like 8 points a game just off carries, you know, like Nick Chubb gets you 5 points off carries. So if you get 20 attempts, it's just like scoring a touchdown, essentially. So I held on to Jordan Howard, did not get Christian McCaffrey. Jordan Howard, shortly after, loses his job, and Christian McCaffrey becomes Christian McCaffrey. So that's my worst trade. That's my worst not trade.
Yeah, I really like that. I think everyone who ever has answered that question has given an actual trade, but that's almost a better answer. The fact that you could have had Christian McCaffrey for a guy. Yeah.
And I won the league. The thing is, I won the league. I don't know if it was that year or the year after. And my team's just like a perennial contender. it's our DTC league with our, you know, DTC staff that have been around. And I just think about how good my team would be if I had Christian McCaffrey, or at least been able to get Christian McCaffrey and then trade him and get the fortune I would have gotten. So I'm a little salty about it, but we've salvaged, we've managed, we're okay.
Yeah, Christian McCaffrey would also be involved in one of my worst trades. That same league with the Zeke thing, we traded, I think, for the 102 and drafted McCaffrey. And we actually drafted him with the idea we might trade him and ended up trading him for first. And I believe it was Paul Perkins.
Oh, no.
Yeah, before he ever played a game, we got rid of McCaffrey. And the first ended up being 102, but I think that ended up being like Darius Geist or something. So
why Paul Perkins? At that time, he was what, the Giants?
Yeah, and he was the lead back. He was ostensibly the lead back at that point, but yeah. We figured we actually didn't love McCaffrey that much, but we thought we could get a decent amount for him. And I don't know why we didn't just take one of the other backs. I don't remember what our thinking was around that, because that was the Dalvin Cook draft, you know, Mixon draft. And I don't know what we were thinking, but we've grown a lot since then. But yeah, for some reason, we were not big on Christian McCaffrey coming out. I guess we were worried
he was wouldn't white.
Be able to handle the work.
We were worried that he was white.
Yeah, maybe that was it. No, I think, yeah, I think it was what you said. He was a satellite back, you know, to us with, you know, some upside. But I think we both saw him as more of that satellite back type, and he wasn't going to do what he's been doing for the last 4 years or so. So yeah, that was one of my worst trades. And what the last question we'd like to ask is, what is the guiding principle in trading for you?
Good question. For me, I think I look at all my teams as portfolios, not mm-hmm. just like rosters. It's just a portfolio of assets. I look at them as assets. And people get frustrated when you say, I have ownership in player. You don't own the player. You own the player's production. I don't know what's so offensive about owning the player's production or having a share of a player. It's not like they're actually ours.
Yeah, that's what I've said. If the owner, but the ownership thing, that's the way I look at it. You're owning the rights to their stats, basically.
Yeah, we're owning their production. We're not owning them. But yeah, so I look at it as like I own these assets, and my whole goal is not just to win; it's to maintain my production, my assets, my equity in my portfolio year after year after year. So all my trades are with that lens. Okay, this is this year. What does next year and the year after, how do I project that moving forward? And I will, even if I'm contending, I will take a little kick in the nuts, because my philosophy is very simple. And I think people do this on the opposite end. So they'll get to towards the playoffs. And let's say there's a no trade league or a no trade deadline league. They'll trade a future pick for an old player. An aging player, right? So they give up future assets. Like I saw somebody last year give up CeeDee Lamb for Keenan Allen, because their thought was, well, Keenan Allen's going to help me win. And the thing I always tell people is that it is hard to win a championship, one. And two, you rarely ever, let's say the production jump from one player to another, like that small production jump, let's say it's 4 points a week on average. How many of your matchups end under 10 points? Let's go 10 points. How many of them actually end under 10 points? Throughout the course of 16 weeks, you may only have 4 or 5 matchups tops that end in a 10-point margin. So trading one player for, you know, a young, like trading in a young asset for a veteran player just to try to get, you know, 4 or 5 points is a losing proposition long-term. So I do the same thing, but on the flip side, even if I'm contending, I will give up an aging stud asset and try to reset the clock on that equity for the interest of the long-term. And if it bites me in the nuts that 25 or 30% of the time that it costs me in that championship, I'm willing to take that for the greater good of the roster.
Yeah, that's interesting. Because I kind of lean towards that other side of on the guy who trades for Keenan Allen.
Stop doing it. It doesn't work. It does not work. Trading for one player does not. Okay, it may.
Now, I will say I would not trade CD for Keenan Allen, but even last year, well, but
yeah, the thing is, it may work. But guess what? Let's say the Patriots would have won last night. Well, that may work too. Or the Raiders betting on the Raiders to beat KC. That may work, but it's not going to work. It's going to work 30% of the time. That's not worth it to me. Like taking the loss 70% of the time is not worth the 25 or 30% of the time it actually pays off, even if it's the championship. Because you win the championship 70% of the time, you lose it. You win the championship 70% of the time, and the other 30% that you don't make the you lose it. So for me, I'm still in that 70-30. I'm happy with that, more than happy with that. So the guy that actually was actually on Twitter, and I had told him, like, this is not going to work for you. And he actually, every week, I said, okay, did Keenan Allen make a difference? And every week he kept us posted. I think he made the trade like 2 weeks before the playoffs, or 3 weeks before the playoffs.
Didn't Allen get hurt late last year too?
He may have gotten dinged.
Yeah.
But the trade did not help him at any point in time in any of those weeks. And never in the playoffs. So he gave up Keenan Allen for CeeDee Lamb for no good reason.
Right, right.
Right. So it's just like, you just got to stop doing it. Trust me. You just got to stop doing it.
You might be right. And that's a good point you make too. That is true that our fantasy matchups, if you look, on an overall basis, they generally do not come down to like, you always remember the ones that come down to like a half a point or a point or 2 points. But the majority of your matchups are double digit wins or losses. So and most of the time, one player, unless it's like a crazy week, is not going to make that much of a difference. Like unless somebody like a Tyreek from this past week or something like that is not going to make that. Unless it's like that, it's not going to make that much of a difference. And so will you even do that? I know you said even on contending teams, are you in the playoffs at least holding, or will you even do that in the playoffs if somehow that opportunity came up where you could move an older player for a younger player?
It's hard when you get in the playoffs because you're trading psychologically. It's really difficult for me to trade a team that's already in the playoffs that I'm competing against, giving them a better player because now
they're the only ones that would want it at that point.
Right. You could be matched up against that person at some point in time. So you're not just losing your points. You're giving them those points as well. So the swing isn't just 10 points. It might be 20 points. It might be a 20-point swing because you're helping them improve their roster and you're losing your roster. Now, when you look at matchups within 20 points, significantly higher. So I'm very selective with how I make those trades. I may try it with fringe playoff teams, and I won't give it to a team that I know is guaranteed in the playoffs. And it's like Derrick Henry's a guy that I have on a lot of rosters because I've always been a Derrick Henry guy, and you can't trade him for anywhere near his production.
Right.
Like he's gapped the entire field by like 30 or 40 points, and it's 4 weeks in. He's averaging like 10 points more than the second best running back 4 weeks into the season. Like, it's just insane.
And his workload is ridiculous. He's still getting 30 carries a game.
And I'm terrified that he's going to get hurt. I do not like the fact that he's getting all this work. And people are like, oh, it's careful what you wish for, right? You don't want to wish for something that could actually backfire. And we're seeing it with Christian McCaffrey. Like, oh, if he ever becomes – you know, if he ends up getting 20 carries and now look what he's doing. He had one great season. Now he keeps getting hurt. Mm-hmm. But so like with Derrick Henry, it's really difficult to make that trade because you're giving up so much production and the equity gained is significantly lower than the production lost. So like it's a very imbalanced production to value for Derrick Henry. So he's one of those guys where he would work really well in the philosophy of that, but he's a bad example because of the way he's perceived, which is amazing because he's been such an animal, but because he doesn't catch passes, people don't want him. Right.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I got him in the fourth round, the late fourth round of a startup this year, which I thought was really good value for him.
He went in the fifth round of a industry league 14 team startup, Superflex League, and he went in the fifth round.
Yeah, I mean, I think especially people, you know, analysts who do podcasts and write and all that stuff are a very ageist group, I think. So guys like Derrick Henry are gonna last, I think, longer than they should.
Yeah, and I tweeted not too long ago, like, Derrick Henry's the exception to every running back rule, it feels like. You know, it's just the way he's the team that he's on, and just his, knock on wood, he's been very durable throughout his career.
Yeah.
You know, for a big guy with long legs, and you'd expect him to have a lot of lower body injuries. And I can't remember the last time he got up and he was shaken up. Like he doesn't, I don't want to jinx the guy, cause I have him everywhere. But like, all right. So let's just stop with the Derrick Henry thing. But yes, philosophically, I'll do that with a lot of players. You just can't, that philosophy doesn't just blanket for everybody that's old. It really, you just kind of have to be selective, and it takes a lot of experience to figure out who those players are at what time and who you're trading them to. But it's a very effective strategy for the long-term benefit of your team.
Yeah, I can see that. And specifically with Henry, I was just going to say, Russ has made the point too, that early on in his career, he was not getting that kind of workload, and maybe that helps him on the back end here. We'll see. And he just seems to be a freak of nature anyway. I mean, he's had these two straight years of it, and he's now a quarter of the way into a third where it's just crazy. And like you said, it doesn't ever seem like he's even like shaken up, or he's, you know, you always see these guys, you know, coming out for a few plays and they're looking at him in the tent. It never seems to happen with Henry. So.
Right. Well, I mean, it's not even that. You look at the guys that have had the 2,000 yard seasons prior to him, and they all have struggled the following year. But he had 303 carries in 2019. He had 378 carries in 2020. He's already got 113 in 2021. And he's on pace for 2,000 yards, well over 2,000 yards again.
Yeah, especially with an extra game this year. That's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, and so it's just 113, like, he's on pace for over 400 touches.
Yeah, over 400 touches, averaging 127 yards a game, more than what he averaged last season on the ground. And it's just like, dude, and now he's catching passes. Like, you get Derrick Henry last year, and he's catching passes. Like, he's almost to his reception mark from last season through four games.
Yeah, it's crazy. If he keeps catching passes, the way, I mean, he didn't have a you know, major pass catching game this week, but if he keeps doing what he's doing, I mean, it's going to be ridiculous. And he keeps the rushing up. So,
insane.
Before we move on to the news, I didn't want to do, for time's sake, I didn't want to do the whole interview with you, but Drew, since you've never been on before, I do want to ask you that last question. Do you have a guiding principle you like to use in trading?
Yeah, I think mine's a little bit more general as far as like the relationship side goes. I think I started off very early, like a lot of folks, where, you know, if I didn't win the trade immediately, I didn't want to do it. And, you know, I think the longer that I've been in Dynasty, the more I want to look at long-term partnership, especially in some of the leagues I, you know, I expect to stay together for a while. So I'm not going to burn the bridge, you know, next season or the season after that over something small this season. So whether that means, you know, maybe giving a little bit more than I expected to, or, you know, being a little kinder with my response, maybe if somebody sends me a ridiculous trade offer, you know, I want to keep that possibility open with as many different people as possible, so that there is an opportunity when the time is right. And, you know, if this one doesn't work, there's plenty of other opportunities to make it happen down the road. So I think that's where I've tried to loosen up a little bit on, you know, either what I expect back or what I'm willing to throw in. And I think trying to get a little bit more precise with, you know, the seconds and thirds overall are not going to win you the championship. You know, you're not going to find the likelihood that you're going to have a solid hit rate in the second round, let alone, you know, in the third round is unrealistic. So I'd rather give up a little bit more and, you know, have somebody come back and ask me to trade again later. And, you know, maybe that's an opportunity to go and get what I really want then versus, you know, dig my heels in and burn a bridge now. So I think that's overall where I'm trying to go more is preserve the long-term relationship and have the lines open down the road versus trying to win every trade now.
Yeah, no, that definitely makes a lot of sense. And one thing you mentioned there, I wanted to ask you is because I know you said you'd like to move the aging assets to get younger equity, better equity, more fluid assets. What is your thoughts on throwing seconds and thirds into trades? Firsts are obviously a different story, but But I personally don't care much about thirds at all. Seconds, I'm pretty free with those as well. So I know you like, you know, we always say picks never, you know, lose value, but a second is not, even a second is not the same as a first. So what are your thoughts on that?
So I'm a finance guy, so I can't, I'm not okay losing value. I'm just not okay doing it. And so I've been doing this a long time, and I know that even the smartest and best analysts out there, and I think very highly of myself as an analyst, and my hit rate and all of that, but even the best analysts, their hit rates are not great. I mean, it's just like sports gambling, sports betting. You can be the greatest sports bettor out there, but your hit rates, your win rate is probably 55%. If you're winning 55% of your bets, even if you hit 60%, you're filthy rich. And I look at the same thing for dynasty analysts. You look at your favorite analyst, they're wrong probably damn near 50% of the time. But when they're right, right, it's just one, we remember it, and two, the upside of being right, the ceiling of being right, changes your outlook significantly. So for me, I'm not willing to give up what is guaranteed, and that's picks. Third and fourth, I will sweeten the pot because A, nobody wants them during the draft. It's funny. So seconds and firsts always go up in value. Thirds really never do. Even during the draft, they just never do. But if you sweeten a deal, people will be pushed over the edge with a third. So I'm okay with it because the value doesn't shift. Yep. But seconds change, and they change quite a bit. So I'll never trade a second in season unless I know that I'm already getting – unless it's already built in. So I have a buffer in that trade where, okay, the second makes sense. I actually have enough buffer built in and I'm comfortable with it. Or I'm giving up a second to acquire a first in a deal. I'm good with that too. Only because I know for a fact that none of my assets are guaranteed on my roster besides my picks, my first and seconds. So, and that's why when I'm probably the first owner in every league if I'm struggling to bail out on the season. So the first person that bails out on the season is going to be the most prosperous long-term. So I try to really look at my rosters and I'm like, okay, am I really a contender? I've been doing this a long time. Like, look at your team. Is this a winning team? Can this team turn it around? Yes or no? And of course, now with the extra game, that changes the kind of the time frame of it. You have to add a week instead of me bailing by week three. Now I would be bailing by week four. But I really love those seconds. I think those seconds are awesome. You can turn those seconds in a lot of drafts into firsts the following year because people get so desperate to acquire those seconds. Now, if you get a late second, you can't do that. Right. But you can turn an early second or, you know, even a mid-second into a following year's first. So a lot of people view seconds very lightly, and I don't. I treat them very, very highly just because I always think about it in the lens of I'm in the draft. So I'm looking at this, so 2022 pick right now. I'm in the draft, next year's draft. How do I feel about this pick? Because that's the value. It's not the value of today. It's the guaranteed value of what it's going to be when I'm sitting on the clock in 2021 or in 2022. So I agree with Drew. Give up the thirds. Do not give up the seconds, in my opinion, unless it's a no-brainer.
Yeah, and that's a good way, especially if you expect it to be an earlier second or you're hoping it'll be an earlier second. There's guys every year that people love to get in those. Like we had, you know, this year, Rondale Moore, Elijah Moore were going in the second. A lot of people like Terrace Marshall, you know. Every year that happens. It's the 2 years ago, I mean, there was even it was a very deep draft, and there's even better prospects in the second. You were getting T. Higgins in the second round and guys like that. So
dude, I mean, I got Anthony Miller when did he come out? 2018 Anthony Miller, 2017
I think,
but it was 2017. So I was in the second, it was like 2:03. I was sitting on the clock and somebody really in my league really liked Anthony Miller. If you guys remember coming out of Memphis, he really had a Twitter, like there was a huge hype train for him. And I was sitting on the clock at 2:03 in a 14 team league. And I got offered a 2018 first and a 2018 second and a 2019 second. For that pick.
Just for one pick.
For the 203.
One second round.
Of course, I took it, of course. Yes. But it's just like, those are the examples of like, you never know. So you might as well just hang on to it. You just never know. Those experiences for me always resonate in my mind because it's so, even though it may be minimal to get that sort of haul, it's still worth hanging on to it because you will get some sort of haul. It just depends on how big or little. I mean, a haul is a haul. I'd rather just hold and see if I can hit the jackpot.
Right, I hear you. Okay, so we'll get into the news now. I mean, we didn't even really get into this show sheet yet. We're already half hour into the show. The news, it's a little inside baseball. Russ wrote up the show sheet before he had to cancel on tonight, and I really don't know where he was going with this one. He put "Happy Birthday, Mike Williams" in all caps. Who it is Mike Williams' birthday. He turns 27 today. And I don't think he's really done much in this game. I haven't been able to totally pay attention, but yeah, he's one catch for 11 yards. But since he put that on there, and I don't think we've really talked about his start, you know, his surprising start on Trey Addicts. I'll ask both of you. I guess I'll start with you, Izzy. What are you doing with Mike Williams? Is he an easy sell for you because we haven't seen this kind of, you know, this kind of production from him in the past? Or is he, I don't think his value is soared to what his first three game production was. It's definitely gone up, but what are you doing with Mike Williams? You buying, you selling? What do you think?
Yeah, I'm giving him up. Cause I know you can get really good return on Mike Williams right now. And he's been underrated throughout his career, but he's been very inconsistent.
Yeah,
and it's not like he misses games. Mm-hmm. He doesn't miss. He leaves games. He doesn't miss them to start, and he just kind of like fights through and plays and the whole thing. But it's just I can't rely on him long term. So I'm really just buying this three-game window of production and hoping that it sustains. And I don't like putting that high of equity into hope. I need more than just hope. So, and for me too, 27-year-old wide receivers, once again, I talk about this all the time. And production and value, there is a point where they meet, okay? Mm-hmm. And we've reached the point now where we've distinguished that players' production, especially receivers, we know, will peak at 26, 27, and then they will decrease guaranteed from there. Production usually stays pretty solid for a couple of years, but the value decreases significantly. Mike Williams has now hit age 27, which is the last point where you can trade a player where their guaranteed value or where their value is not guaranteed to drop. After this point, it is guaranteed to drop.
I agree with you on the value. I do think that the production does tend to last through like 27, 28, 29.
29. You're probably even good to 30 for a lot of us. But for me, it's very simple. Trade at 27, find a young asset, put into that, and then buy 30-year-old wide receivers. So over the last couple of years, you should have been buying guys like Thielen. You know, guys like...
They're so cheap.
Yeah, because he was so cheap and he was producing. So it's like you just have to kind of shift equity around to different spots to backfill those productions and get those younger assets. So for Mike Williams, I like him as a player. I don't like whenever Mike Williams, he's always the guy that just like Derrick Henry's never shaken up. Mike Williams is just like the king of shaken up. Like every time I'll hear the shows again, Mike Williams shaken up on the play. So I would cash out now. It's not like it's only three games, so take your solid equity and move on.
Yeah, and it's been pointed out. I mean, he's had good seasons before. He's had a 10 touchdown season. He's had a 1,000 yard season, but he's never put it together. And he seems to possibly be doing that now. But where are you at on Mike Williams, Drew?
Yeah, I am more likely to move him if I can get solid value. I don't mind to hold him for a little bit, but I'm certainly not going after him for what people are looking to get for him. Yeah, I agree with Izzy. I would rather go and see, you know, how low is somebody on Julio right now as a 32 or 33-year-old for when he comes back. So yeah, I love Mike Williams and I love the idea of him. I think I struggle between him and Will Fuller. You know, it's like, do I want Mike Williams, who's tied to Justin Herbert and probably is going to have some big games blowing up here? Do I want Will Fuller, who, you know, we'll see what he does as long as Brissett is throwing to him. So that's one of those things that I struggle with. Yeah, I would probably for this year prefer to have Mike Williams and, you know, ride him for a few more games and see if his value goes up at all. But if I get a solid offer for Mike Williams, I'm taking it.
Yeah, I'm with you too. I own very little Mike Williams. I think I have him in one or two leagues, and I haven't sold him as of yet, but I really need to start doing that, especially with him maybe trailing off a little in this game.
Let me ask you guys a quick question. Mm-hmm. You're sitting with Mike Williams. I'm guessing, sounds like neither of you guys are very high on this guy. So in the DTC, his value is in the Deontay Johnson, Jerry Jeudy, Jalen Waddle pocket right now, Deebo Samuel. Do you like him over any of those guys?
Who are they again? Deontay.
So let's go with Deebo, Deontay, Jeudy, Williams, Waddle, Claypool. Even Claypool's a little bit lower.
Yeah, I think him over Claypool. I'd rather have Mike Evans. Yeah, I would rather have almost any of those guys. I love the youth with Waddle, and whether Tua comes back or they trade for Watson or somebody else, I would love to have Waddle. Yeah, Deontay, of course. I'm not as high as some other folks in present company, but you can't deny the production and the talent there. So Jeudy, I could kind of I'd probably take the youth with Jeudy and hope that they sort out quarterback down the road and he settles into his role, because when he does play, he certainly shows the talent that made him go to Alabama, that made him get drafted early. So yeah, I would certainly trade out for one of the younger guys there pretty easily, I think.
Yeah, I'm with Drew. Well, and with Deontay, he could be referring to both of us, is he? Because I'm right there with him. He's my guy too. I've been on him like you since going into last year. I love Deontay, and he's been a target monster. I'm trying to think of any of those guys. I mean, Debo's close for me because I'm not sure I'm buying into Deebo either. I know he's had crazy production as well, but he had two broken plays basically that account for a huge amount of yards in his two big games, and the other two games were so. I'm not in love in general with the Niners passing game. The various options they have to spread it around to. I know it's been largely Deebo so far, but Ayuk and Kittle are going to get involved, and Shanahan loves to use the run game. I agree with Drew. I think I prefer Waddle over Williams. I prefer Jeudy over Williams for the youth, for the upside. Claypool, I'm not a big Claypool guy. I think, is that everybody you mentioned?
Yep, pretty much.
I would think I would take Williams over Claypool, but the rest of those guys I would not do. And I know Claypool, people love his huge upside, but I just worry that offense is a dumpster fire right now that only I think Deontay and maybe Najee can survive production wise for this year. And going forward, I know there's a huge upside with Claypool. He's an athletic freak, but we don't know the quarterback situation. I have more faith in Deontay to be quarterback proof than I do Claypool. He's an elite separator. Deontay is. He's a target monster, so he's not going to give you the big splash plays that much. He did have a 45-yard touchdown this week, but that's kind of a rarity. But he's just going to produce for you in terms of volume week after week. Claypool, I don't know what to expect given the quarterback situation in Pittsburgh, and then he's definitely tied there for the next 3 years, including this year. So, where are you on Claypool, Dizzy?
Yeah, I'm low on Claypool because of the quarterback room. Like,
right.
I think Claypool is a guy that if you tether him to a good quarterback, he's going to be a stud. But the way he's utilized and the way that Juju and Deontay operate is they have to use him down the field more. And that's just not conducive to, one, having a poor offensive line, and two, having Big Ben. So they need to shore up that offensive line. They need to be able to give him time to create down the field. And then I think that you can buy into Claypool being productive every single week on a consistent basis. But right now, I just don't like the value. He's still catapulted by those, a big 4-touchdown game last season. And people are just waiting for him to kind of be that guy that's consistent week to week. And I don't think that's going to happen in 2021. So I'm lower on him, but I'd probably be buying on the dip going into next year.
Right. Okay, now that we got Mike Williams' birthday out of the way, we'll get into some of the injuries from this past week. One of the big ones was DJ Chark, broken ankle. He went to IR this week. I haven't heard a timeline yet, but broken ankle seems a pretty long timeline right there. So, Drew, yeah. What do you think of the fantasy impact of this and the Jaguars wide receiver? You know, are you buying into LaVisca now? You're buying low on Marvin Jones as one of those 30-year-old guys. What do you think?
Yeah, I think you missed your window to buy low on Marvin Jones leading into the season. I think this could be the best thing that happens for Chark based on the dumpster fire that the Jags are in general. He has an excuse for not getting any points this year. We'll see what happens with Meyer over the rest of this year. Hopefully Trevor Lawrence gets to develop some more and, you know, they get another camp together next year and Chark comes back as a solid wide receiver too. And I would be looking to get him on as many rosters as I can. I've already got him on probably half a dozen already. So I'm fine to park him on IR. I'm not really actively going out looking to add Jaguars assets to my portfolio, as you would say, for right now.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I just can't wait for Urban Meyer to be gone. I hope it's after this season. I just don't know what's going on. I don't have much of any of those guys. I don't think I have any Shark. Of those guys, the most I have is definitely Marvin Jones because he was cheap. I'd get him in throw-ins and deals and stuff like that. But Izzy, what do you think of that Jaguar? I guess the Jaguars offense as a whole, but specifically the impact of the Chark injury.
Yeah, I mean, it hurts. Chark is not who we wanted him to become, unfortunately. I think after 2019, he had that breakout season, and he was a very, very hot asset. And it's just kind of last year was a letdown, and this year was only catching 31% of his passes thrown his way. And I think when he comes back, he's basically just a field stretcher. That's all he's going to be, I think, in his career. I think he's going to be a number two, but it all comes down to price. And I think his price will be so deflated after this injury that you could probably scoop him up and he could be he's a great flex play, because what ends up happening, and I think a lot of people get this lost in the shuffle, if you're drafting him as a wide receiver two, which a lot of people were doing, he was climbing close to wide receiver one in 2020 startup drafts. But he's not going to give you consistent production, so you don't want that. But once you start plugging players like DJ Chark into your flex, now you're treating them almost like best ball players, because you want that high upside in that flex. So the higher the ceiling, the better. And that's going to be a great spot for DJ Chark when his value starts to dip, which it already has. So buying into DJ Chark, like Drew was saying, is probably a pretty good idea right now, because you're paying flex prices, and that's going to be a great fit for him. So I actually like that. I think it's a savvy play. He's 25. He'll be turning 26 next year. So you still have, like, nobody's worried about him kind of falling off from an age perspective. So we're good.
Okay. And we have, three more injuries we're going to mention here. One of them has much more significance than the other two. So I'm going to lump those other two together real quick. Just see if you guys have any thoughts on him. Montgomery went down with a knee injury. They believe it's not a torn ACL is what came out, but I still don't think there's been any announcement on an MRI or anything like that as of today. And Logan Thomas went out with a hamstring injury this week, very early, kind of killing a lot of fantasy managers this week with his bagel. But Izzy, any thoughts on either of these two injuries before we move on to that final one?
Yeah, both of them are, like, I don't know how long. Hamstrings I try to stay away from just because they linger. It's kind of like A.J. Brown, one of my favorite receivers, just got that hammy. Like, you try to stay away from hammies as much as possible in seasonal just because they linger and they can get re-aggravated and the whole thing. So kind of sucks for Logan and for Monty. Depends. I mean, it could be like Deontay. If you remember him from 2 weeks ago, he got hurt and it was only a 1 week injury, but it could have been far worse. And we don't know where Monty's spectrum is massive for what this injury is. So I guess we're kind of in wait and see mode for Monty, and with Logan, there's really nothing you can do about it. He'll be back and hopefully he's probably going to have a decoy game where he's he's back, but he's not going to play a full snap load. He'll probably just be like 30% snap share, but he'll be active, and you're not going to get much production out of him. And then kind of slowly comes back into the unit.
Yeah, hamstrings suck. It's one of those things you hope the team does the right thing for him and lets him sit an extra week, but typically they don't. So yeah, I'm with you as far as, you know, probably sit him out the first week that he's active again, see how he does, and hope he doesn't re-aggravate it. As far as Monty goes, I'm curious, how aggressive are you going to be trying to get a replacement for him if you have him on the team? I think most of us are hoping that he's maybe an RB3 for most, but you know, after last year, I think a lot of people might make him in their RB2, so they might feel the pressure to go and try to get Damian Williams or get Khalil Herbert. What are your thoughts there as far as getting a fill-in based on the wide range of outcomes here?
Yeah, this is one of those things where almost this is kind of philosophical, where whenever you have a player like Monty and there's a clear backup that's worth nothing, you should always have that player on your roster. And I've made a mistake of, I have Monty and I don't have Damian Williams on the roster, but I also have a bazillion leagues and I'm just all over the place, right? But if you have three or four leagues and you have a Monty and the backup is dirt cheap, you should have Damian. It's not like you have Chubb and then you have Kareem Hunt, where if Chubb goes down, you get Hunt's production and you don't have to worry about it because Hunt costs a lot. But for Monty, it's Damian Williams. And then if you have to shift from Damian Williams because he may be too expensive or somebody's holding him over the fire for you to get him, then you're going to have to shift to find somebody that could, like a J.D. McKissick. So if you can get J.D. McKissick for super cheap, if you can get him for a third, if you can sneak that out, a third plus a throw-in player and get J.D. McKissick, not only does he help you for the time that Monty's out, but you could flex him out. So there's definitely some angles there. I would go after the Hineses and the McKissicks, the PPR guys that'll get you 10 points but are never going to get you 25 unless you're J.D. McKissick, who's actually gotten pretty close to that. But in most weeks, they're not going to. So that's kind of the angle I take. But I wouldn't go after Damian just because the person that has him is going to expect you to overpay.
And Drew, one thing that occurred to me is like, I kind of hate this as an opportunity to buy low on Monty himself, depending on how long he's out. If it's going to be like 3 or 4 weeks, they're expecting, because I think he's been an underrated asset anyway. Everybody seems to hate on him, despite the finish he had last year. Would you be looking to do something like that in regards to Montgomery himself?
Yeah, absolutely. I've had him for the last couple of years on multiple rosters, and sure, I was thrilled last year to see the soft schedule at the end, and he took advantage of it. But I've got high hopes for Justin Fields down the road, so I would love what that could mean for Monty. So if people are souring on him because of an injury, I'm certainly willing to make a few offers and see, see what that looks like. I'm not sure what that would look like at this point. I'm thinking about what Izzy shared earlier. You know, do I have a fringe player in a second that could get me there, or even a solid like flex player in a second? I don't know that too many people are going to be that sour that quick, but if it lingers for a couple of weeks, I could definitely see some people getting there. I won't be one of them for what that's worth, though.
What do you think, Izzy? Do you think you can get a dip on Montgomery? Let's say they say he's out for a month. What do you think his value would be? You're muted.
My first podcast. Monty's probably one of the only exceptions to like, don't buy, like, I just don't like buying running backs because they're overinflated in price and they lack durability and the whole thing, and they can blow up in your face. But he's a bell cow at a significant discount, and with the injury you might even get him for cheaper. And Damian Williams really isn't that big of a threat. Like, there's really nobody on the roster where, like, damn, that could be the future. And Khalil Herbert is fine, but by all accounts, he's not anywhere near taking his job or even taking Williams's job. So I think you're absolutely right, Rocky. If you want to make a sneaky play as a contender and you want to get a cheap running back, go after the Monty owner and just, like, even try a trade, like, if they're a contender and you're a contender, take the bullet and offer like Chase Edmonds for Monty.
I like first that. Name that came to my mind. I like that.
It's like you make a trade like that. Could it backfire? absolutely, the odds of it backfiring are a little bit lower. It's a calculated risk. But I like the vision of it. And more often than not, when you're making, you're putting in your bet at the ticket window, you're probably making the right bet. And whatever happens, happens. Are you guys poker players? You guys ever played poker? And Rocky, I think you've asked this before.
Yeah, I do a little holding.
I'm not really. Yeah. I played a little bit, but I'm not really a poker player. I'm not very. The little bit I have played, I'm not very good at it. So
people get fixated. Yeah, people get fixated on like the result, and the result shouldn't be what makes what changes your perspective. It should be the process. So if I put my hand, if I put my chips in when I'm ahead, that's the right process, because it may not work one time, but if you do the same process over and over and you got a 55 or 60% chance of it succeeding, if you do this hobby for 15 years, you're winning long-term guaranteed, because you're winning 60% of the time. So it's like you have to look at it from that, not the outcome. People are so fixated on the outcome that it messes up their process. So
right, yeah.
That's kind of the Chase Edmonds for Monty. Look, because now they're going to be like, oh, I'm not going to get rid of guys that end up getting hurt, and these guys that are breaking out like Chase Edmonds, but is he really long for the starting role?
That's what I was going to say. I mean, I think once, like I said, assuming Monty's injury is short term, I think once he's back, you're probably getting for the rest of season that once Monty's healthy, better production than you are from Chase Edmonds, and better long term potential. Like, I don't know that Chase Edmonds is much of anything beyond 2021. I think Montgomery's still probably going to be firm in that role at least through next year. So, yeah, I like it on both ends. So that makes a lot of sense. So we'll get to this last injury, which everyone, nobody wishes injury, but I think a lot of people were kind of happy with the result of the injury, which was Jimmy Garoppolo's calf injury. It actually came out today. I think Shanahan said it wasn't definite he's not going to play next week, but I think we're all assuming he won't. And a lot of people were very excited to get to see Trey Lance. I'm very curious on your guys' thoughts on Lance in general going forward. I've not been a big Lance guy. Not that I dislike Lance. I think people have been a little too high on him. I think people are kind of ignoring the floor that there could be there if he's not a very good passer, which we really have no idea. And this game did nothing to dispel that one way or the other. He had that broken play where Deebo Samuel was basically open by like 30 yards from everybody on the Seahawks and just ran to the end zone. And, you know, you take out that play, he was 9 for 17 for like 80 yards. So he didn't show much in the passing game, but he did run for 41 yards and only a half football, which is what everybody loves about him. So, Drew, I'll let you go first on this one. What are your thoughts on Lance? And you think Jimmy gets the job back if he's healthy in a couple weeks?
Oh man, that's so tough. Some of that is, it all depends on what he does in the next couple of weeks while he has his shot. I trust Shanahan right. more than I do Matt Nagy with that kind of decision.
I was just going to make the Justin Fields comparison, yeah.
But I love having Lance where I have him, where I was able to get him through the draft because I think I got good value for him in a lot of those cases. A couple of leagues I was able to get him at 104, 106, somewhere in there, depending what other people needed. I'm definitely a Fields over Lance guy based on their body of work. I do tend to be a little bit more skeptical. I was not big on Gibson last year coming in, so I know I missed out on a few opportunities to have him on teams just because of the limited workload that he had in college. So for me, pass production, I lean on that maybe more than I should. I don't take enough risks there. He certainly has the talent. His statistics when he did play in college were ridiculous. They were video game esque. That's like playing on rookie mode. So, I think the design plays they had early in the season showed that he can go out and execute on some of those plays. I'm always a wait and see guy. I'm watching Justin Herbert tonight, and he's one that, I was lucky to get late in a draft and then foolish enough to trade him away before the season started last year. Even then, I want to see what happens in year two when teams have film on these guys and they can actually scheme for them. So does the talent and the system evolve? I like Trey Lance overall. I'm not going to go, I don't want to go pay the farm for him. I'm not there for him yet. I don't think, I'm not sure that I believe that he's the next Mahomes or, Allen or Kyler. yeah, it's tough for rookie quarterbacks early. There are very few that succeed right out of the gate. So, but I don't know. I don't know that Shanahan goes right back to Jimmy G at this point. This is an easy time for them to make the transition if that's what they ultimately want. I mean, they trade up to get him, so they clearly like him. So I don't know. If I was a betting person, if he splits, you know, let's say Jimmy G's out two games, he goes 1-1 and doesn't have a bunch of turnovers. I think Trey Lance probably still holds a job for the rest of the year.
I think you're probably right on that. I tend to lean that way unless he looks like a disaster, which I don't think he will. But I guess what you said about the production, the college production, is my biggest, one of my biggest concerns with him, though. I always worry about guys. He started for 1 year and one game the next year because of COVID. And I don't know how you, at a lower level, I just don't know how you can judge from that. And people are just projecting what they want to see and assuming he's going to run for 80 to 100 yards every game. It seems like the way that he's valued. So Izzy, I'd like to know your opinion on Lance in general as a player and what you think about going forward. Is it going to be Lance season all year?
Yeah, he's very, right now he's very similar to Colin Kaepernick. Now, the thing with him, it's, is he always going to be Colin Kaepernick or is he going to be more? And that's kind of the gamble you're making. So it's very simple for me. If I have Lance and I'm expecting him to be my QB2, you know, I have X quarterback, let's say it's a good quarterback, and Trey Lance, and let's say my QB3, right now I've been like starting Big Ben, or I got somebody that's like Taylor Heineke or something like that. I don't want a Trey Lance because it's too risky in a situation like that. I'd rather have Justin Fields, who may not have the same ceiling as Trey Lance, in my opinion, because he's not tethered to a great offense right now. But I think that he's a safer prospect at the quarterback position. So I'm willing to take the lower ceiling for the higher floor. But if Trey Lance is my QB3, for me, it's a very low risk proposition because if he bombs, I still have my two starters. But if he bangs, then it changes the trajectory of my team.
Right.
So I like Lance for what he is. He's a high ceiling, low floor player. The reason why I'm okay with him and why I had him a lot higher than I normally would have is that I like the fact that he's with Shanahan, because Shanahan has actually shown the propensity to turn CJ Beathard's performed well in spot starts. Nick Mullins has performed well in spot starts. Jimmy Garoppolo, who I don't think is very good, has performed well in his starts. So it's like, if Trey Lance is okay, he'll make him good. You know, where a lot of coaches, like, for instance, if Justin Fields is good, Matt Nagy will make him okay. You know what I mean?
Right. So
it's like, for me, it's I'm kind of trusting, I'm putting faith into the system and how there's so much yak in that system. So Trey Lance just has to find somebody and put it on him, and then the yak will do the rest, right? With Debo and Ayuk and Kittle, right, they're yak guys, and dumping it off to running back. So let the system do the work. So I like Lance for what he is, but I understand the risk.
Yeah, that's the risk. Just where I think I have one Lance here, because the risk is just worrying me too much. I was with Drew. And I think it sounds like you too. Maybe I was a Fields over Lance guy in rookie drafts where I had the chance to draft one of those quarterbacks early. And
I had Lance over Fields.
Okay,
in San Fran. So like before San Fran, I had Fields over Lance, but at their landing spot, I like Lance over Fields because I like Shanahan and what I've seen out of his quarterbacks, how he's turned, you know, bad quarterbacks into okay ones. So I just like the ceiling in that offense a lot, but yeah, it's close.
And the ceiling is super high, but you pointed out too, I think the floor is more there with Justin Fields, and he's not going to be stuck with Nagy forever. So I doubt he's stuck with Nagy beyond 2021 the way it looks right now, but and Drew's crossing his fingers. We got some listener questions, only a couple trades this week. I'll ask Izzy, you want to do the listener questions first? Or you want to do the couple trades we have first?
You're the host. You run it.
Okay. Let's go to the listener questions and then we'll finish up with the trades. One of these, and we sort of talked about this guy a little bit before. One of these came from something you sent to me and Outhouse Russ. I don't know if it's a DM you got in response to our. Okay. Yeah, you said you should talk Ayuk trade value on the Trade Addicts Pod tonight. I'm curious what people are selling or buying for. His value is just at an all-time low, so I don't want to sell. And I don't know how you can argue with that. I don't see why you would want to sell Ayuk at this point. If you have them already, but I'm certainly not buying. I was hesitant all off season, actually on both guys, Ayuk and Samuel. I wasn't sure, as I kind of alluded to earlier, I wasn't sure who was going to be the guy. If either of them, I thought Kittle was mainly going to be the guy. I wasn't sure the volume was going to be there, especially once Lance became the quarterback. I don't expect that to be a high volume passing offense. But what are your thoughts on this Ayuk question?
I'm a big Ayuk guy, so it's like I kind of feel like I'm trying to acquire Ayuk. It's
how much do you think his value is dead? Like, what do you think you can acquire him for at this point?
It's a risk, but it's not the same risk as like people like, oh, Dante Pettis.
Yes,
that's Dante Pettis. If you look at the hype with Dante Pettis, it was unwarranted. He really didn't do enough to warrant. Like, there was a small sample there. With Ayuk, we got a pretty large sample of his rookie season. He had from the games that he played, he had a pretty historic rookie season from his per game production.
So you don't subscribe to the, a lot of his production came with the Kittle and or Debo hurt theory?
No, he's just really good. Like, you watch him play, he's really good. He's a really good player. Now what I've said on the DTC pod before is there's clearly an intangible there that we're not privy to. So whether it's a work ethic problem, whether it's an attitude problem, I don't know, but there's something there, which is an issue. And Shanahan probably just doesn't put up with that shit. I mean, just like with Dante Pettis, he didn't give him a chance, right, to earn it back. And I worry about that with Ayuk, but it's definitely a calculated risk that I'm willing to take, because I know that he's not as bad as, you know, Dante Pettis is a player that I wasn't in on, even with the hype. I was selling that idea. But with Ayuk, it's like I'm buying the idea because I've seen it with my own two eyes, how good he is. You have to remember, this is a guy with a 6'10 wingspan. You know, so it's like, guy's a freak. He just needs to clearly get his head on straight. And we saw that he was starting to play a little bit more, and I don't know what I haven't looked at the snap count from this past week, but his production wasn't there. So he's still a young receiver. I think he's 23 years old right now, and I'm really just kind of looking at this. Even if this is a redshirt season for him, I'm really putting in faith long term based on my infatuation with the player. So it's a risk. Undeniable risk, but the risk is becoming less and less because the value is decreasing more and more every single week. So I'm the risk is more appetizing for me right now because the reward is significantly higher than the risk.
And I can see that now because his value has gone so much lower. Drew, how do you think you can, where's his value at now? Do you think is he still worth a first? Can you learn for less than a first in terms of picks? Or
I don't think I'm giving a first for him. I don't think I'm quite there. I see the talent. I mean, the highlights from last year when he got the touches are great. I do agree. I think there's more reason to stand behind him than a guy like Pettis. So I can get the idea of banking on him long term. Maybe, you know, San Francisco ships him off as a part of a package somewhere if Shanahan just doesn't like him and he gets unlocked somewhere else. I think, you know, does Belichick get his hands on him somehow in 2 years? You know, what can he do with that? And Mac Jones. But I don't know. Is this like is this a Mike Williams for Ayuk situation? Does that happen this early in the season for some managers? I don't know if that's realistic or not. But I don't know that I'm ready to part with a first yet.
Izzy, it sounds like you would trade Williams for Ayuk?
Not straight up. I don't think I'd have to. Maybe after this week, but no. I would be definitely open to a Ayuk plus for Williams. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Those are the type of trades I think long term are they're risks worth taking.
Yeah, I'm just not there with you. I get what you're saying, and a lot of people, a lot of smart people like Ayuk, I just haven't gotten there yet in terms of how high you are on what he did last year. So I'd be scared to take that risk. I'd probably, unless I can get him for probably less than a first, and maybe you can. I don't know. I haven't really tried. I'd be a little nervous to put that into him. I don't have the faith that you do is.
Yeah, I try. I mean, I tried to steal him. I don't want to say steal him. I tried to steal him. I offered now that after DJ got hurt, I offered Zach Moss, who's starting to produce, and Marvin Jones to acquire Ayuk to see, like, hey, how depressed is his price?
Right.
And he's like, I'm a huge Ayuk fan, so I couldn't get him. But I guarantee you a deal like that you could make for an Ayuk, and for me, that's a price I'm willing to pay because the ceiling on both the assets I'm giving up, I'm not giving up a whole lot of upside. Where with Mike Williams in a deal like that, you are technically giving up some upside because Mike Williams could be, you know, a 1,210 guy and he's relatively young. But Marvin Jones, he also could put up, you know, 1,210, but he's 31 years old.
Yeah.
So it's a little different.
I think that's the price it would have to be for me to take that risk is something like Moss and Jones. Because like you said, I don't see them ever increasing that much in value. So especially Jones is not going to increase, but I don't think Moss ever will either. So
it's a contender's play. You're trying to trade him to, he's on a contending team right now, and I'm trying to give that person two contending pieces for, you know, what looks to be right now a shitty 2021 for Brandon Ayuk, and hopefully he turns it around.
Yeah, I've got a 12 team home league that I'm punting in. This is the one that I end up moving Baker and Pollard to get Watson in a super flex. So I'm looking. I've got Kareem Hunt sitting there scoring points every week, trying to figure out what's the right value back. Is that something that you would do if you were me? See if I can give up Hunt to get Ayuk back if I'm looking at next year or the year after.
Yeah, I think that's reasonable. What I would do in a trade like that is try to give up Hunt in a third for Ayuk in a second, just to make it a little sweeter.
I like that.
Yeah, that'd probably be my angle on it.
Yeah, and like as he was saying, that's a total contender move. And Hunt is I don't know exactly what it is after this week, but I think he was like RB 6 or 7 or 8 going into the week. So and that only probably improved. I think he had another touchdown this week. So. That one makes a lot of sense if you want to go acquire Ayuk and you don't care about this year. Hunt's 26 himself, so
you're probably missing out on next year too. Like Hunt, I think, is going to be sustained for a couple of years because the way he's utilized.
True.
So the way he's utilized is he's probably going to be doing this for the next 2 or 3 years, even at his age. And you're paying the premium right now is very low for a guy like Hunt and what he's producing. So the risk that you'd be making, it is a risk that you'd be making because Hunt may not be a bell cow, but you can still plug him in an RB2 role and his production versus his value is production's higher than value. So not typically a trade I'd like to make, but once again, you're talking to an IU fanboy. So it's like, I try to remove my bias, but it is definitely a trade that could backfire. The good news is that it's not a trade that backfires where Kareem Hunt could be an RB1 long term because we already know what the situation is, right? So, yeah,
and Hunt too should be locked into. I believe he's locked into Cleveland through at least next year too.
Yeah, with Chubb. Yeah,
yeah. So, I'm not sure. I meant to ask you about this question for the show because it almost seems like an in joke to me or something that I'm not getting. But at Renshaw Fantasy asks, can you define Age Apex?
Yeah, he knows what Age Apex is. Yeah, so it's Age Apex is very simple for running backs. Age Apex is 26 for wide receivers. Age Apex is 27.
Is this like a discussion you guys have had before?
So I think it's because I've talked about it on the show.
Oh, okay.
So I've watched trends of player values because that's what our product is basically, is values. So, I've looked at it pretty extensively over time, and for tight ends, it's like 32. So tight ends, you don't really need to worry about it. But for running backs and wide receivers, the running backs, their value is guaranteed to drop once they hit, after they reach age 26. Once they hit 27, their value is guaranteed to drop. For receivers, once they hit age 28, their value is guaranteed to drop. Unless, and we're talking about the higher end guys. But if we're talking about like the lower tier guys, a lower tier guy could just have a breakout at age 28 and then his value is higher than what it was. Well, that's because his value was low to begin with. So that doesn't really count.
Right.
So yeah, that's kind of the age apex in the conversation behind it. So for me, it's like once a running back hits 26, I try to dump him before he reaches 27. And same thing with a receiver. And I completely understand the production conversation. The production, I'm not selling the production. The production I expect to sustain, it's with running backs, not as much on the production because it's always iffy. But the receivers, I completely understand that the production past age 27 will be there. That's not the argument. The argument is I know for a fact there's one fact, and the fact is his value is going down. The production is not a fact, right? It's still up in the air. There are variables that could affect that production. A la Allen Robinson is a great example. Look how quickly his value has depreciated, and he's supposed to be quarterback proof and the whole thing. So now he's old and not producing. That's like the worst combination you can have because you can't move that equity. You're stuck. Yep. You can't even trade Allen Robinson probably for you probably couldn't trade him for Mooney straight up. Like people would rather probably have Mooney. Yeah, exactly. So it's like now what do you do? Just because and this is people are willing to not take Allen Robinson and hold on to Mooney, even though Allen Robinson's had 5 years, 6 years of production, and Mooney's had one game or a season and a half of relatively decent production, but definitely not QB1 or RB or wide receiver one production. Yeah. We're talking like wide receiver 3-2 fringe production, and people are not willing, likely not willing to give up Mooney for A-Rob. And that's kind of the age apex conversation. It's just not worth holding on to players when that's what can happen to their value. You're much better off just trading that player before their value plummets and then buying them back later. Like I said, buy them back at 29, 30. Like I plan on buying DeAndre Hopkins next year. Can't wait.
Can't wait.
It's gonna be awesome.
Yeah, I hear you. I tend to buy some of those older guys. I don't know if I wait as long as you though, until they're 30, but it makes a lot of sense. And I want to get into another question here from Ridley Truther at CWC Wood One on Twitter. I know he's a listener to the show, a loyal listener, and also to Dynasty Junkies. He says, in a win now roster situation with Kamara and Eckler as my starting running backs, I want to move Kamara, but the running back landscape sucks right now. What are some realistic offers to trade away Kamara you'd make? And he mentions, here's my team. I don't know if this in the tweet he had put his team. We don't have that up here though. So, but he said he didn't have much RB depth. And he says, by the way, I hate running backs, which I know Russ agrees with. But if you were trading away Kamara, what are you looking for right now?
Oh, that's tough. I don't have a lot of Kamara, so I'm not, I don't have a lot of personal connection to this. You know, Kamara's a guy, I think, similar to Hunt based on his usage. I think he could have two or three more solid years of pretty solid production. So again, if it comes down to the value piece, if you think that his value is going to dip significantly in the next year or two because of his age, because of if there's uncertainty at quarterback or something, then certainly cash out while you can. If you think you can, you know, reset the clock like Izzy's talking about, I don't really know what I'd be looking back to get back if I'm contending. You want players, you want points now. If you're contending, you don't want to just dump him for a couple of firsts and call it a day. If he hates running backs, yeah, maybe you get Monty plus something that you like at wide receiver or tight end, depending on what your format is, and you can get that production and reset the clock a little bit. Maybe at another position, if you can get a younger wide receiver you think is going to, you know, really develop by the end of the year. So I really don't know. Maybe it's Monty and trying to think of a wide receiver that maybe is younger that hasn't quite done it yet. Maybe like a T. Higgins. I don't know if that's enough to get for Kamara back, but you know, a couple of guys that could maybe help you end of season, give you a little bit of depth. And, you know, for T. Higgins, who's still young, tied to Joe Burrow, love him in his situation with even with Jamar Chase there. So That's the first kind of combo that I would look for. And again, that might be me giving a little bit on the value of where Kamara is right now. But if I'm trying to get ahead of the curve on that, I like T. Higgins a lot, though. So he's a younger guy that I would definitely try to package in a deal if I could.
Yeah, I'm with you. And in the offseason, I actually moved, I think, in two different leagues, Kamara for Swift Plus, which you cannot do now, I don't think. But that worked out. At least I feel it's working out pretty well for me so far. I was very worried about Kamara coming in this season. I still have a few shares, but what I was worried about is happening. So that I feel the offense is kind of cratering there a little bit. He's been getting tons of carries, which has been unusual. He's had, I think, like 3 20-plus carry games this year, which he rarely had done throughout his career. But this last week, he had zero targets. I don't know what Peyton's doing there. I'm also worried if, Winston hasn't been lighting the world on fire. So if Taysom comes in there, we could be seeing those low target shares on a frequent basis. So I don't mind the idea of moving them. And I like kind of what you said there, maybe getting a lower tiered RB, plus some young wide receiver back. Another one guy that popped into my head is the guy everyone was giving up for dead a couple weeks ago. And I think from listening to ETC, I think Izzy wasn't very high on him, but CEH has bounced back the last couple weeks. And we talked about him, I think, when I was on Timeline a couple weeks ago. Oh, Izzy hates CEH, it looks like.
It's not a good trade. It's not. Don't even say it, Rocky. Don't even finish.
Why is that, Izzy?
I had this conversation with Hurley actually on the pod, because I actually traded CEH to Hurley in a deal. If you look at CEH and you look at Miles Sanders, their first two seasons so far, like if you look at Miles Sanders' first season, almost identical to CEH's, and the start of their second season are almost identical as well. CEH is just Miles Sanders. That's all he is. So what's going to end up happening is you're getting no receptions out of CEH, and you're getting no red zone carries out of CEH. You're getting limited touchdowns out of CEH, and you're getting 12 to 15 carries. So what you're getting is 6 points. Because he rushes 12 times for 60 yards, and then you get one or two receptions, and then what? And you get no touchdowns. He 17 games in, I think he has 7 touchdowns, so you're getting a touchdown every 2.5 games, let's call it. That's not good. You're getting 2 receptions on average throughout the course of his career. That's not good. And you're not getting 20 carries. You're getting 12 to 15. That's not good either. So, like, no matter how you skin the CEH cat, which I don't know where that saying came. I don't know how many people are skinning cats. But if you were skinning the CEH cat, there's really nothing outside of it's Kansas City that you're hanging your hat on. You're paying a ridiculous premium for the Kansas City label when CEH is – there's nothing there for you to fall back and be like, well, at least – I'm getting this. And there is no at least. There's no at least. There's nothing. You're not getting high volume in carries. You're not getting high volume in receptions. You're not getting high volumes in red zone target or touches. So, like, there's nothing. He's a fraudulent player. We're always going to expect CEH to be something that he's not. We're 17 games in. If we haven't seen it by now, we're not going to see it. He's a first round pick. You're trying to tell me that they spent a first round pick and they're waiting to figure out how to use him? No, they know what they had. This is how they implement. Andy Reid does this with his running backs. It's just how it's been. Unless you're a Brian Westbrook, very few have made it to become the bell cows in a Andy Reid offense. But most of the time you're expecting just what CEH is producing.
Yeah, and you definitely made some good points there. And the biggest worry for me is the goal line thing. I mean, we see them bringing in Darrell Williams for CEH near the goal. I think he had in the Eagles game this past week. He got a run that took him down to the one, and then Williams scored a touchdown. So, I see your point there. But what do you think then in terms of trading Kamara away?
I He's frozen. Is he frozen for you? Oh, he's there.
I'm here. Did you hear the question?
He's frozen again. There he is. He's back.
He asked, he was asking if you have a trade in mind that you would want to get back, or what pieces would you want to get back if you're trading Kamara away?
Yep. So I think he's asking you.
No, I was asking you.
Oh, he's asking me. Oh, yeah. You're asking me. Oh, yeah, so I'm waiting for Drew to respond.
Yeah.
For me, I think a great example would be who we just talked about. I think Kareem Hunt is a fantastic idea. So if you want to trade Kamara, you trade Kamara for Kareem Hunt plus. And I think that would be a winning recipe long term. Kareem Hunt plus a first for Kamara. I like it. Like, and I think that's even light. You could probably try to get more than that, but that would be kind of the start, like the start of an idea, or Kareem Hunt plus a receiver that you really like, whether it's somebody injured like T. Higgins, or somebody in the Jerry Jeudy, Kareem Hunt and Jerry Jeudy for Alvin Kamara might be a good angle. Kareem Hunt plus, see if you can get like a Deontay. Would that work? Maybe that might be a little too much because Deontay's producing, Kamara's really not. I guess he is and he isn't. He's producing, just not the way that we are used to him producing. But I would probably look in that pocket. Kareem Hunt plus a first and a small piece, or Kareem Hunt plus a solid wide receiver two with wide receiver one upside.
Yeah, I think those are all good options. So we'll get into this last question, which was more directed specifically at you than the group, which is from at FF Evolution. Would be interested to hear Izzy's opinion on some, if any, types of trades he would do or does that are counterintuitive to their DTC values.
Yeah, so this is actually, it's interesting because our values are basically just what would be crowdsourcing. So the values don't come from our opinions. They come from purely gathering data. So what we see is what we're trying to replicate the pure market. And for me, there's a lot of flaws in the market. Injured players provide a lot of opportunities to take advantage of the market. The 29-year-old receivers that you can get, the older, the Kareem Hunts of the world, like you can take advantage of those markets. Like there's so many opportunities in the trade market that you can take advantage of that I definitely disagree with how people are utilizing their players in these trades. So I would say, yeah, there's a ton and it's really all just dependent picks. Like our picks in our calculator, they go up over time just because people value picks higher, more and more over time. Mm-hmm. The earlier you can get on those picks, the better. Like there's a window like between August when people are trying to build their teams and then like October, November, where you can actually get picks off of people because they're trying to push. A lot of opportunities there. So yeah, I mean, there's a bunch of stuff. I could probably talk for hours on it. And I know I talk a lot, so I'm not going to talk for hours, but yeah, that'd probably be a bunch of examples right there.
Yeah. And I think that's one of the best uses of, especially your calculator, because I know it does the intention is, and I think it does a pretty good job of reflecting market value. And that's, a lot of people like to shit on trade calculators, and I don't use trade calculators, but I think that's one of the best the best ways to use them is to kind of look at some of the values and see where you think it's, you know, way off. And like I said, not that, like you said, it's not your guys' personal values, it's the market value. And you disagree with what DTC is saying the market value is, go make some offers one way or the other based on what you're seeing there. I do like to use it that way sometimes. Like, like in the off season, like the guy we were talking about earlier, like Ayuk, his value was very, very high, and that would, I didn't have him, but if I had, I only had him maybe in one place, which I do think I sold. So, so I didn't agree with it, and I think something pretty close to what the calculator would have said his value was. So I think that's a good way to use it, even if, you know, I don't think it's an awesome way to use it is to just construct trades in it, like, and then you send that trade. It's more, either to double check yourself or kind of check market values to see where you think it's what, you know, it's off from where your personal values are.
Yeah. A good example of that is actually targeting year two wide receivers that didn't produce in year one, but year two wide receivers, people give up on wide receivers a little too soon just because we're kind of, we need a now. But year two wide receivers is actually a really good investment just because you have a low cost to get in, but you have a unknown ceiling, and it's worth finding out what that unknown ceiling is. So there's always an opportunity to get those year two wide receivers.
Yeah. And I think in terms of like guys who do data stuff, I think it's generally been shown that the year two is the most common year that guys will break out, so to speak. You know, so that makes a lot of sense too. I think that was the last question. So we have a couple trade out, only two trade addicts trades this week. So we'll move on to them and then we'll finish up here. The first one, just a reminder, trade addicts leagues are all 12 team PPR super flex 1.75 tight end premium. There is a TA1 trade, which is the only league that does not have 0.05 for return yards, but it doesn't really affect the trade anyway, because neither of these guys are returning kicks. So so the trade was Stephon Diggs for Terry McLaurin and a third. Drew, I'll get your thoughts on it first, and then we'll do Izzy. This was actually a trade between me and Russ, and then I'll tell you which side I got.
So I, as the resident Bills fan, it's so hard not to look at Stephon Diggs here. I know his age profile, he's probably on that back end of where the value is. That's pretty easy for me. I'll take Diggs, who's tied to Josh Allen here. And, I think the style that he plays, he could have a lot of years of production left. McLaurin, I know people are trying to figure out if he's quarterback proof as well. You know, Heineke seems to love him, but I'll take Diggs and I'll buy the jersey if I can too.
So, Izzy, your thoughts on that one?
I don't like either side. By the way, was this trade made off of like DTC? Because the trade would be dead even on our calculator.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Because McLaurin, wait, which side is getting the third?
McLaurin's on the third side.
So McLaurin and a third for Diggs?
Yes. Yeah.
So ours would be flipped. We'd have Diggs and a third for McLaurin. So,
so you have McLaurin slightly higher.
Slightly higher than Diggs. I mean, at the end of the day, I think it really comes down to the fact that McLaurin's producing more than Diggs right now from a points per game perspective. I'm guessing that's how people are valuing them. I would shift. I wouldn't like either one of those guys. I would take McLaurin or Diggs and trade him for Devonta Smith plus. I've seen enough of Devonta Smith where I think that he's an excellent football player. So I'll take that. I'll take the youth premium there. That's a perfect example of trading a guy, a receiver at the apex where I'm losing some of the production, but Devonta Smith will give me 60% of the production this year. But he'll get me maybe 90% next year, and I can get something on top of that. So I don't like either of your sides. If I had to pick a side, I wouldn't pick a side. Maybe I probably Diggs very, very slightly.
Okay. Well, at least you guys both took my side then, even though you don't like either side, Izzy.
Very slightly.
This was actually offered
with either side. If I had to pick one and you had to tell, I'm taking McLaurin or I'm taking Diggs, I'd be like, fine, whatever.
Yeah. This was actually offered to me by Russ. And I just like, yeah, I looked at it. And to me, I mean, Diggs is, I think, less than 2 years older. So I wasn't too much worried about the age factor. Like you said, Drew, I mean, I think Diggs is going to produce for multiple years, although, as Izzy has said multiple times in the show, I'm sure his value will go down by next year, probably, because he'll be 28. But I think the production will be there. I didn't see that much of a difference between the two. And as we talked about earlier, thirds don't matter to me one way or the other. And he sent it to me. I was like, okay, sure. So I like Diggs a little better than McLaurin.
I'm surprised you guys agreed to that. Like, those are deals that I would never make.
Because I was surprised trading, he sent it.
It's like, it was a cold offer. It's kind of the same pocket of player in terms of production, what to expect. I will say, like, the Heineke, the reason why I would take the Diggs side is like the unknowns in Washington. I just don't. I don't love it long term. And is McLaurin quarterback proof? Maybe, but it's 3 weeks. It's not enough for me to be like, yeah, he is. Like, let's just hold your horses a little bit. So things are just a little bit safer.
Yeah, and that's where I was at. And Drew mentioned this, the fact that he's tied to Josh Allen, who's there long term. So that was what did it for me. And like it was just, to me, the third didn't matter. And it was just, would I rather have Diggs or McLaurin? I'd rather have Diggs. Okay, except. That's basically how that one went down. And this one, our last trade here is from TA8. Jesus, this is a seven-player deal. This was also Russ. I was not involved in this one, though. Damian Harris, Amari Cooper, Juju Smith-Schuster, and Robert Woods for Najee Harris, the man of the hour, Cordarrelle Patterson, and Michael Pittman. So Izzy, what are your thoughts on that one? Can you process all that?
Every single player you named on the first side, I cringed at. So for me, it's the Najee side. So let me break this down for you, just so I could make it easy. So give me the players again. I can pull up the
players on both sides, or just that first.
So here, okay, I have it.
Okay,
so it's. The way I'm going to look at this is Damian Harris, let's say Pittman and Juju are a wash. Are we good with that?
Yes.
Fair. Pretty close. So let's wash those two guys. Then we look at the Harris and Patterson. I'd rather have Patterson slightly than Harris. Would we agree with that? But it's close. Like I'd be okay either way, but Patterson a little bit over Harris, or would you guys have the opposite?
No, I agree with that. I'm not a big Harris fan, so yes.
Okay, but it's close, negligible. For me, Cooper versus Woods, it's easily Harris. Or sorry, Cooper and Woods versus Harris, it's easily Harris.
Yeah, Najee. Yes.
Would we agree with Najee Harris on that?
Yeah, for me, definitely. Yes.
So that's kind of how I break. I try with deals like this. I try to like
cancel out
as much as you can, and then find where the gap is. And in this situation, the gap is the Najee Harris to Cooper and Woods. So Patterson and Pittman for Harris and Juju are pretty close. They're closer than Cooper and Woods are to Harris, in my opinion.
Is that where you fall on it, Drew?
I could be convinced to get there. I'm not a Damian Harris guy. I would much rather have Patterson over Harris. And some of that I'm sure is the recency bias of the production and seeing what he's done so far. But New England running backs, they're just not, they don't do it for me. They're the guys that I try to offload as soon as I see any kind of value spike. Najee, I don't know that he'll be able to keep it up here. I hope they invest in some offensive line help. I hope they get quarterback sorted out. I don't know that he is, the age for him starting in the NFL. I don't know that he's got a long arc where, Amari and Juju still have the potential to, whether Cooper stays with Dallas long-term, which is fine because he's with Dak. If Juju goes somewhere else, you know, any place is better than whatever Ben is using right now for his throwing arm. It's tough. I think value. I like Pittman probably a little bit more. I forgot who you even compared him to on the
Juju.
Front. To Juju. Yeah. I would probably rather have Pittman. I think the idea that second year, I think, I had him lumped into some deals this summer that I was really excited about. So I probably have a higher outlook for Pittman than I do for Juju at this point. So I could get on board with, if you think Najee is the best player in that group, you get Pittman on top. And then, yeah, I mean, I'm fine riding Patterson for however long he goes, but I think it's pretty close for me depending on what my team needs are, but I could get on board with the Najee side.
Yeah. And I'm with both of you, and that's the side Russ got, by the way, was the Najee side. I have Patterson by pretty much a fair amount to me over Harris. Maybe I'm falling victim to recency bias. But I think they're going to continue to use them. He's not going to score three touchdowns or even two touchdowns in a game, which I think he's done in two of the four games. But he's getting receiving work. He's listed as a receiver on MFL to many people's dismay. But Damian Harris gets zero receiving work. And I just, yeah, I would rather have Patterson for 2021 a lot more than Harris. I like the way that Izzy broke it down. I'd rather have Pittman than Juju, and I'd rather have I like Amari, but I you know, and we don't, I don't know what's going on with Woods, if that's, if he's going to rebound or if it's just what we've seen is what it's going to be all year. So I'd rather have Najee over those two as well, just for the volume alone. So it's a pretty easy Najee side for me as well. So 3 for 3 on that one. And as Russ would say, that's the end of our show sheet. So that is the end of our show. I want to thank Izzy for coming on. This was a great show. We've gone on for quite a while here, and it's kind of flown by. No. I love it. I was going to say it's flown by. It hasn't seemed like as long as it's been. We're like an hour and a half into the show, and it zoomed by. It was a lot of good conversation. So Izzy, I want to thank you for coming on, and I want to just give you a chance to, you know, to plug DTC and anything else you want to say at the end here. You give your Twitter handle, all that good stuff.
Oh yeah, I don't need a plug. I don't have a SoundCloud or anything. No, DTC, DynastyTradeCalculator.com. You can find me at DTC_IzzyE. But this show is about you guys, right? Trade Addicts, good guys, good show. You know, that's the most important part. You guys are good guys, and that's all that matters. I appreciate you guys having me on.
I appreciate that. I appreciate those kind words. So I'll just finish up with some of our business here. You can follow the show at Trade Addicts Pod. Follow the DAP Network at DAP_network. And make sure you subscribe to the DAP Network on YouTube. You can get all the shows. Trade Addicts doesn't go live, but Dynasty Junkies does. Fantasy Timeline, which Drew is a member of, does. Make sure you're following Drew at DR_PRA. He's not a doctor, but he plays one on Twitter.
He just stayed at Holiday Inn Express last night.
You can follow me at Dynasty FF Addict. Follow Russ at Dynasty Outhouse. Also, don't forget, you can go to for shirts, ffpodshirts.storenv.com. There's for all the DAP Network shows. I know FF Intervention, I think, is on there. Dynasty Vipers, Superflex Super Show, other merchandise. So, and all the proceeds go to charity. I think it's still, we've been rotating it, but I think it's still Fantasy Cares right now. Yeah, so that's a great cause there. And I think I mentioned everything. Oh, Patreon. We have a Patreon, Trade Addicts Pod. I guess it's patreon.com/TradeAddictsPod. If I got that right, I think that time. So I think that's everything. Hopefully Russ doesn't tell me I left something out at the end here. But again, thanks, Izzy, for coming on. And we'll see you all next week. Good night, guys.
Hey, good meeting you, Drew.
Awesome. Thanks, Izzy.
Pleasure.
You too.